Good morning. This is Birdie reading the commercial news for Thursday, January 7th, 2021. U.S. Capitol stormed, lawmakers evacuated, by the Associated Press, Washington. Violent protesters loyal to President Donald Trump stormed the U.S. Capitol on Wednesday and forced lawmakers into hiding in a stunning attempt to overturn America's presidential election, undercut the nation's democracy, and keep Democrat Joe Biden from replacing Trump in the White House. The National Guard and state and federal police were called in for control, and the mayor of Washington imposed a rare evening curfew. One person was reported to have been shot. The protesters were egged on by Trump and his false attacks on the integrity of the November presidential election. While rallying his supporters outside the White House Wednesday morning, he urged them to march to the Capitol. But later, hours after they fought police and breached the building, he told them that although they were very special people and he backed their cause, they should go home in peace. President-elect Biden, 2 weeks away from being inaugurated, had declared in Wilmington, Delaware, "I call on President Trump to go on national television now to fulfill his oath and defend the Constitution and demand an end to this siege." Biden said the democracy was under an unprecedented assault, a sentiment echoed by many in Congress, including some Republicans. The chaotic protest halted Congress's constitutionally mandated counting of the Electoral College results, in which Biden defeated Trump 306 to 232. Republican Senator Majority Leader Mitch McConnell said he tried to steer Congress away from Wednesday's formal protest of those results, and he said at the start of the proceedings that Trump had clearly lost. Wednesday's ordinarily mundane procedure of Congress certifying a new president was always going to be extraordinary, with Republican supporters of Trump vowing to protest election results that had been certified by the states. But even the unusual deliberations, which included Vice President Pence and Senate Majority Leader McConnell defying Trump's demands, were quickly overtaken by the chaos in a raucous, out-of-control scene. Protesters fought past police and breached the building, shouting and waving Trump and American flags as they marched through the halls. One person was reported shot at the Capitol, according to a person familiar with the situation. That person's condition is unknown. At least one explosive device was found and detonated. The protesters abruptly interrupted the congressional proceedings in an eerie scene that featured official warnings directing people to duck under their seats for cover and put on gas masks as tear gas was used in the Capitol Rotunda. Senators were being evacuated. Some House lawmakers tweeted that they were sheltering in place in their offices. The Pentagon said about 1,100 District of Columbia National Guard members were being mobilized to help support law enforcement at the Capitol. Pence was closely watched as he stepped onto the dais to preside over the joint session in the House chamber. Pence had a largely ceremonial role opening the sealed envelopes from the states after they are carried in mahogany boxes used for the occasion and reading the results out loud. But he was under growing pressure from Trump to overturn the will of the voters and tip the results in the president's favor, despite having no legal power to do that. "Do it, Mike. This is the time for extreme courage," tweeted Trump on Wednesday. But Pence, in a statement shortly before presiding, defied Trump, saying he could not claim unilateral authority to reject the electoral votes that make Biden president. Despite Trump's repeated claims of voter fraud, election officials and his own former attorney general have said there were no problems on the scale that would change the outcome. All states have certified their results as fair and accurate by Republican and Democratic officials alike. Arizona was first on the list of several states facing objection from the Republicans as Congress took an alphabetical reading of the election. Then the chaos erupted. City receives funding for more demolitions by Jennifer Bailey, Danville. With blight continuing to be rampant around the city has received additional grant funding for demolitions. City officials announced at Tuesday night's Danville City Council meeting that the city had received a $175,000 Strong Communities Program grant through the Illinois Housing Development Authority. The grants are funded by the Rebuild Illinois Capital Plan. The money will go toward demolition of properties around Danville. "We have a lot of houses to be torn down," Mayor Ricky Williams Jr. said. "I know the citizens of Danville will appreciate it." In other business, Ward 7 has a new alderman on the Danville City Council. Darren York was sworn in at Tuesday night's meeting. York then listened in on the meeting. He won't begin voting until the next meeting. York takes the place of longtime alderman Steve Foster, who resigned. Ward Alderman Bob Iverson said he's heard from some Ward 7 residents that they believe a candidate running in the next election shouldn't be appointed to fill a seat due to he or she having an unfair advantage in the next election. Iverson said it's the mayor's call, and he supported it. He also said incumbents do not necessarily have an advantage in the election. Williams said he interviewed York and the other April 6th election Ward 7 candidate, Kayla Huber, for the seat. He said both have good character and care about Danville. "He is a man of integrity. He really cares," Williams said of York, whom Williams has known, and he had encouraged York previously to run for office. York now has some time and is prepared to serve on the city council. Williams also said York more closely represents the folks in Ward 7. "Voters can see if they want to vote for him in April," Williams added. York, who previously worked for Aunt Martha's Health Center, is a senior rehabilitation counselor with the Illinois Department of Human Services, Division of Rehabilitation. He also is a member of the city's Human Relations Commission, is involved with his church, and has been involved with the Soccer Association and local peace marches. His wife, Barb, is a Danville District 118 teacher, and they have three children. "It's really exciting to have him join us," Williams said. The council also heard an audience comment about trash coming out of toters. If there are broken toter lids, residents can call the city. In other business, the council approved the appointment of Foster to return as a Vermilion Regional Airport Authority board member since he is no longer on a government board, with a term to expire on December 31, 2025. Authority's early loan payments to pay off the loan of the 2002 Pierce fire truck refurbishment by using better than projected cannabis tax revenue, and approving budget amendments including to only pay statutory minimum pension payments due to the lack of once projected casino revenue, amending Chapter 18 of city codes pertaining to taxation to no longer have funding from the city's home rule tax sales tax going to the storm and sanitary sewer fund. Iverson said he disagreed with it and voted against it. Amending the Community Development Block Grant 2019 Annual Action Plan and CDBG Fund for COVID-19 funding. Aldermen question if letters to businesses will help. By Jennifer Bailey, Danville. 10 months into the coronavirus pandemic, and people in Vermilion County still are not wearing masks or socially distancing. That's the concern expressed by some Danville City Council aldermen at Tuesday night's meeting, with a couple suggesting the city send letters to businesses to encourage their employees and customers to wear masks. Mayor Ricky Williams Jr. said, "I did confront the Walmart manager about that. You can control that," he said about employees not having masks on. Williams said, in talking to management at Menards and Walmart, some customers too will never wear masks or take them off or don't wear them properly when inside the stores. The discussion on COVID-19 was on the city council's agenda at the request of Ward 2 Alderman Dan Duncan, who was not present at the meeting. Ward Alderman Bob Iverson said about seeing a recent list of church members who have COVID-19 in the community. The list was too long. Most cases continue to come up. Two, Iverson said, there is hope with the vaccine, but that Vermilion County continues to see hundreds of new cases each week and increased deaths. He said he thinks Danville is at a point in the pandemic that city mask mandate, in addition to the state's mandate, or additional measures should take place to help residents. He said the city could look to assist businesses stay in business with outdoor facilities such as heated igloos. Iverson said support is being given to families who've lost their jobs, but what about support for health care costs for those who can no longer work because they have COVID-19, or for funeral expenses? Courts have ruled the governor has the power to set regulations, he added. He thinks there is more the city can do to control the local coronavirus disease numbers, such as enforcing the state's no indoor dining regulations and limiting local restaurants to takeout dining only. Iverson said, it's hitting Danville more than we ever thought it would, and it's frustrating we can't do more about it. Williams responded that the vast majority of new cases are from the prison. He said he doesn't see the difference with indoor and outdoor dining, and additional cases are coming from people getting together in private homes and through gatherings. In audience comments, the council heard a comment from resident Cindy Parr Barrett about the virus spreading more rapidly. She said it's appalling city officials are encouraging defiance against state regulations. She asked the city to ensure safety of all. Ward Alderman Brenda Brown, too, asked city officials to consider where the city goes from here, with the possibility of a second strain to getting to Danville. Regions could have some mitigations loosened starting January 15th. By Grace Barbic, Capital City News. Springfield. Statewide Tier 3 COVID-19 mitigations could be lifted within 10 days. Starting January 15th, exactly one incubation period from New Year's Day, any region that has met requirements for a reduction of mitigation will be able to move out of the Tier 3 mitigation plan, Governor J.B. Pritzker announced Wednesday. I'm cautiously optimistic, as there are some early signs indicating that some regions have made real progress and won't reverse that progress this week or next, Pritzker said. The entire state has been under Tier 3 restrictions since November 20th in an effort to combat potential holiday surge in cases. Under these increased restrictions, businesses are required to follow 25% capacity limits and close bars and restaurants to indoor service, a mitigation that will still be in place even when the region moves back to Tier 2. Pritzker said that despite not seeing a post-Thanksgiving surge, he is still advising Tier 3 restrictions be upheld for one incubation period or 14 days to ensure infection rates remain as low as possible. After January 15th, regions will be able to proceed past Tier 2, which would allow restaurants and bars to reopen for indoor service, depending on their future infection and hospitalization rates. Because of high demand for the COVID-19 vaccine, the U.S. Center for Disease Control and Prevention Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices recommended two initial priority groups receive the first round of vaccination. Those in Phase 1A who are currently receiving vaccines include healthcare workers and residents of long-care term facilities. Phase 1B will include Illinois residents aged 65 years or older and non-healthcare frontline essential workers. ACIP recommended residents 75 years or older be prioritized, but Illinois reduced the age by 10 years. Prisker noted the average age of COVID-19 deaths is 81 for white residents, 72 for black residents, and 68 for Latino residents. Phase 1B will begin once Phase 1A is substantially completed, but a specific time period is not yet clear. Pritzker said that many healthcare workers and long-term care facility residents are still in the process of receiving the vaccine, and a decrease in federal vaccine distribution could delay the move to the next phase. The increase in federal vaccine distribution relies heavily on whether the Biden administration will implement the Defense Production Act President Donald Trump invoked in his Cold War law in response to the pandemic, which gave him emergency authority to control domestic industries. The Defense Production Act was most recently used to prevent the hoarding of supplies, limit the export of medical goods like PPE, and increase the production of critical supplies. Pritzker anticipates that there will be a significant increase in vaccine distribution once the DPA is invoked. The state reported another 139 COVID-19 related deaths Wednesday and confirmed the death count in Illinois from the virus rose to 17,096. Hospitalizations and positivity rates for COVID remain roughly the same from the previous day, with the 7-day rolling average case positivity rate falling to 8.4%, decreasing for the second straight day. As of Tuesday night, 3,928 individuals were hospitalized with COVID-19 in Illinois, an increase of 23 from the prior day. There were 812 individuals in intensive care unit beds, an increase of 12 from the day before, and 451 individuals on ventilators, a decrease of 6 from Monday night. The hospitalization numbers appear to be leveling with 27% of beds available statewide, 22% of ICU beds available, and 73% of ventilators. And now the obituaries for January 7th, 2021. Robert E. Clem. Robert Bob Eugene Clem, 87, of Danville, passed away December 18th, 2020, at the Waters of Covington in Indiana. A memorial service and interment of ashes will be performed at a later date. He will be laid to rest in Sunset Memorial Park, Sunset Funeral Home, and Cremation Center in Danville, assisted with arrangements. Douglas C. Marlett. Douglas Cornburn Marlett was born in 1948 to Hazel Worley Marlett and Corbett Dircher Marlett. In honor of Doug's wishes, no services will be held, but a memorial gathering will be held at a later date where everyone can come and share their memories, laugh, and honor Doug the way he wanted to be remembered. Memorials may be made to the Schlarman High Development Office. Carol DeMilano. Carol DeMilano, 87, of Perrysville, Indiana, went home to be with her Lord and Savior Jesus Christ at 1:30 p.m. Friday, January 1st, 2021, at OSF Sacred Heart Medical Center in Danville, Illinois. A graveside service will be held at 11 a.m. Friday, January 8th, 2021, at Resurrection Cemetery, with Pastor Scott Randolph officiating. Her inmate arrangements were entrusted to Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center in Westville, Illinois. She will be laid to rest next to her husband. Memorial donations may be given in her name to Camp Assurance in Georgetown, Illinois. Tina M. Hubert. Tina Marie Hubert, 55, of Villa Grove, passed away at 6:15 a.m. on Tuesday, January 5th, 2021, at Carle Foundation Hospital. A graveside service will be held at 11 o'clock a.m. excuse me. On Saturday, January 9th, 2021, at Centennial Cemetery in Villa Grove. In lieu of flowers, memorial donations may be made to the Villa Grove Booster Club. Mark Duane Jones. Mark is survived by his wife, Marilyn Jones, brother Steve Jones, sisters Donna and Connie Jones of Tilton, stepchildren, grandchildren, and great-grandchildren. A celebration of Mark's life will be held at a later date. And these obituaries were received by 5 p.m. Wednesday. Garowalski, Lorraine E., 102, passed away peacefully at her home January 3rd, 2021. No public services at this time. Kruger Cone Pape Funeral Home is in charge of the arrangements. Neef Matthew B., 27, passed away suddenly at 5:13 a.m. Sunday, January 3rd, 2021, at OSF Heart of Mary Medical Center in Urbana. Arrangements are pending at Robinson Chapel in Catlin. Attica, Indiana, Thomas Loretta M., passed away at her home with family at her side on Tuesday, January 5th, 2021. Graveside services will be held at the Riverside Cemetery in Attica on Friday, January 8th at 1 p.m. with Pastor David Adams officiating. Westville, Vasilio, Joseph A. H., 88, passed away Sunday, January 3rd, 2021. According to his wishes, he will be cremated and there will be no services. And now community briefs. Danville. DACC offers forklift operating training. Danville Area Community College's Corporate Education is offering forklift operator training on Monday, February 15th, 2021, from 8 a.m. to 2 p.m. at the DACC Technology Center. This class provides training to keep your employees and workplace in compliance with OSHA's forklift safety standard. The program gives details on the powered industrial truck, from the way it's constructed to the way it works. It will help your operators understand the factors that affect forklift balance and maneuverability. It covers both the classroom instruction and driving, making safety the top priority. Participants will be provided a certificate of completion to present to the employer. Participants must be at least 18 years old. Dress for outdoor forklift driving, long pants, closed toes on your shoes, etc. Registration fee is $150. Call 217-443-8779 to reserve your seat, or email Brittany Woodworth at bwoodworth@dacc.edu. All training at DACC is held in compliance with the latest CDC guidelines for COVID-19. DACC Ready's Leadership Boot Camp 2021. Danville Area Community College's Corporate Education is offering a Leadership Boot Camp 2021. Give your supervisors and managers of the skills they need for success. 8 unique courses in a condensed leadership series led by Steve Wellen from February to May 2021. Seating is limited, so enroll today. Employees attend a half-day class every other Tuesday for 4 months from 8 a.m. to noon, Central Standard Time, at the DACC Bremer Conference Center, Room 110. Registration deadline is January 29, 2020. Register early to reserve your seat. For more information or to register, call Brittany Woodworth at 217-443-8779 or email bwoodworth@dacc.edu. Adapting Style. Illinois looks to extend Big Ten win streak by Chad Dare, Evanston. Early in the Big Ten Conference season, the Illinois men's basketball team has proven it can win offensive shootouts or defensive slugfests. After victories over Minnesota and Penn State, where the 12th-rated Fighting Illini scored 92 and 98 points respectively, the last two wins over Indiana and Purdue were more typical Big Ten games, in which Illinois scored 69 and 66 points. It's very important to win both types of games, said Illinois junior guard Io DeSumo. You are not going to score 100 points or in the 90s in every game. In the Big Ten, there are going to be games like Purdue and Indiana, where you have teams that are well coached and they make it a real physical game. You have to be able to find other ways to win, and that's what we did. Illinois coach Underwood admits that he is not surprised by the contrasting styles. Every opponent has a different scheme or different style of play, he said. We have just faced two, Indiana and Purdue, and they are good defensively as any teams in the country. What they do is very effective. You have to be able to adapt. You have to be able to win different ways, whether it's scoring 90 or scoring 60. Underwood believes that one constant in both types of games is the defense and rebounding. The Fighting Illini is 8-3 overall, 4-1 in the Big Ten, ranks third in the country, and tops the Big Ten Conference in rebounding margin as they outbound their opponents by 13.5% per game. So which kind of style does Underwood prefer for his team? The one that allows us to score the more points than our opponent, he said. Style is something that we can try to influence, which we do because of our running, and teams have to adjust to that. Our last two opponents sent guys back to stop in transition. Tonight's opponent for Illinois figures to fall somewhere in between. The Northwestern Wildcats are 6-3 overall and are averaging 72.4 points per game. Northwestern is well coached, said DeSumo, who is averaging 23 points per game. Tonight's contest can be seen on the Big Ten Network, while it can be heard on the Busey Bank Illinois Sports Network, including Danville stations WDAN AM 1490 and WDNL FM 102.1. This is Birdie signing off for January 7th, 2021. Have a good day.